Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us on the program. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and we also link to our guest's website. We'll be giving that to you in just a moment so that you can continue your investigation, your search. If something resonated with you and you want to follow up on it, hey, we encourage you to go to the website of our guests and see what they have to offer, see how they might elucidate. Maybe you can even make contact and talk with them yourselves and see where that takes you, because that's what we're all here for, to help support one another. It's one big, vast, as they say, global community. That one is kind of a hard one to grasp sometimes when you think about global. When I was a kid growing up and we wanted to take on various tasks in the world, we take a look at the world's situation and go, oh, that's just too big. It's too monumental. I can't do that. And some folks would say, I'm not even going to try. And that's why we've always encouraged folks to just do what you can where you are. And my guest is along those lines, doing just that. Her name is Holland Haas, and she is the author of Consciously Connecting, A Simple Process to Reconnect in a Disconnected World. And Holland, thank you so much for joining us on the program. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Richard.
You know, the way that you and I presently are conducting this interview is probably pretty typical of the way that they've been done for probably the last 30 or 40 years, if not live in studio. But then the advent of computers and the internet back in the 80s and 90s, and then we were able to communicate over the computer. And of course, today I do some of my interviews using Skype or other programs like it, and it makes it sound almost like they're in studio. Our cell phones can be also set up to do the same things. I mean, it's just, the technology is unbelievable. But
technology has changed everything. It's really changed the world that we live in, and not just the world, but the individual experience and how we connect to ourselves and each other.
Yeah, that's an interesting point you bring up, connect with ourselves. I was watching a program where there was a gentleman who was featured. He was like one of the top 20 or 50 or what have you YouTube people. And this was a young kid, couldn't have been much more than in his 20s. And he was on a television series called The Great Race, I think it was. And he and his partner in The Great Race, and all of the people were, we'll call them geeks. They were technologically savvy. They would, as much as I know, they would put me to shame in that regard. And he said that they had to give up all of their technology. He says the first day it was really hard, but the next day it was like, oh, I'm free and I can just go and do things. Well, then he, he had heard something about some particular news story and wanted to know, try to get some information, but he couldn't contact anybody. He couldn't connect on the internet. He had no technology. So as he's traveling through the various countries that they're running the race through, he's asking people, not for directions on how to get to their next destination, but can you tell me what's happening with? Yeah. But see, that's the way it used to be. I think of the town crier here in the United States during the Revolutionary period, and even prior, you'd have the town crier out there, hear ye, and
that's
they would
right.
be disseminating the news.
Yes. Well, it's interesting when you talk about technology and a lot of the millennials and younger kids, but even for us as well, what is happening is we're realizing that we are losing our communication skills, we are losing social skills, we're losing our humanity. So it's fascinating when we really put our devices down, and as this person was, you know, running through these different countries and trying to again, not ask where I'm going, because you can read a map and figure that out. It was more about, hey, what's happening out there, because I don't have technology. What you're creating by doing that is a deeper level of connection with other human beings.
Mm-hmm. Well, bear in mind, you used a phrase there that we don't want to gloss over. If you know how to read a map, how many people in the younger years know how to read a map? I use GPS. I don't need a map. And now, by the way, when I first started using GPS on my phone, my wife and I, we were traveling up to Cambria, north of Santa Barbara, And I knew where we were going. I mean, there was only one way to get there anyway, but I knew where we were going. I'd already seen it on the map online. But I decided I was just going to turn it on just to see what would happen. And so it was more of a source of amusement. And of course, it gave this disclaimer right when I turned it on that it may not be exact. It could be off by 300 to 500 feet or something like that. Uh-huh. So every so often we're traveling on the same highway. We know where we're going. And it would say, okay, get off at the next exit and turn and do this and that to get back on the freeway, if you will. And
right.
It's like, wait a minute, we haven't left the freeway.
Right. You don't know where we really are.
That's right. And going through L.A., it's even worse, you know, because
yeah.
Everything's much closer together. Well, technology can certainly be a boon to us. There's no question. But some of the things that you elucidated there, I find it fascinating that the things that I learned in English class, for example, are missing from everyday, not only conversation, but certainly writing. And I'm still trying to figure out who came up with the syntax for newspaper writing versus book writing versus just writing down information. Because you're seeing he said a number of times throughout the article, and there's only one person that they're talking to. It's an interview.
Yeah.
And da-da-da-da, he said. And he said, da-da-da-da-da. And da-da-da-da, he said. And I'm going, what? So I'm still trying to figure that out. But then there's this other grammatical thing of, if the name ends in an S, you don't add another one.
Right.
It's like the apostles of Jesus, apostrophe, as opposed to Jesus's apostles.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, what English class did you go to? You know, why are people throwing on these extra S's? And then I found an interesting rule. My sister, I had her proofread the book I'm working on, and she sent it back to me, and she had removed all my commas and put in ands. And I'm going, wait a minute. But here's what's interesting, Holland. I found out that both ways are correct.
Yeah.
Both ways are correct. So I certainly couldn't get all over my sister about that. She did a magnificent job at proofing what I had done that to that point. Connecting consciously, and of course the title is Conscious Connecting, Consciously Connecting.
Consciously Connecting.
And tell me, because I want to start at this point. I mean, I look back and I quote my parents quite often. My father gave me some of the best advice as far as career. He says, be sure you find a job you love to do because you're going to be doing it for a long time.
Yeah.
I was really fortunate to find it in my teens. Matter of fact, I'd still be doing the first job I loved doing next to this one. I'd still be delivering newspapers because it was great going out and meeting people and my own hours almost, you know, that kind of thing, and being out in the outdoors and that kind of stuff. It was great. But my mother was also a big influence. Yours, and you even dedicate the book to your mom, who you refer to as your mentor as well as your friend. Tell me about that influence, that connection that you have with your mother.
Well, she is this extraordinary woman who was well beyond her time, and I'm so grateful she's still with us. You know, when we were kids, one of the things she used to say, and again, this is in the 60s, so, you know, we're very cognizant of how we speak and word choice now and verbal reframing, but back in the day, that wasn't necessarily so, and I remember any time my brother and I would go negative or say we couldn't do something, she would always say, thoughts are things and words are powerful tools. And of course, we giggled. We just thought that was the most hilarious thing. And our mother, she's cuckoo. And, you know, we just thought that was funny until we started to get, you know, as you get a little older, and I don't know, maybe 11 or 12, and I was telling her about something that I couldn't do, and I was really frustrated because I continued to practice, and I continued to be dedicated, and I can't do it, and I'm no good at it, and this isn't working. And she said, well, it's not a surprise. And it stopped me cold in my tracks. And I said, well, what do you mean? She said, well, you keep reiterating how you can't do something, how you're not good at it, how you don't have the talent, how it's not working for you. She said, everything is negative. She said, thoughts are things and words are powerful tools. And you're continuing to think that you can't do something. So as long as you stay in that mindset, even though you're practicing and continuing, then your words, instead of your words being influenced by how you are succeeding, how you're getting better, you're not acknowledging that. So what's happening is you're really not moving along as quickly as you should be. And I had to really, you know, I was taken aback. And again, I wasn't that old. And I thought, oh, you know, and the wheels start turning and you really start to get it. And so the questions then became, well, I'm and it was piano. We're talking about piano. So I said, okay, I keep practicing. I'm not getting better. And she said, so it becomes, I continue to practice and I'm getting better playing the piano every day. She says, that's what you need to tell me after practicing every day and before you sit down to practice. And you, and I was like, oh. So again, long before many of the books were out, she was really, in my opinion, cutting edge with the understanding of we really create our own reality and we really create what is going to be in our life and what we're going to attract. And words really play a huge part of that as well as the thought.
Well, you know, to me, it is really interesting that you discuss these kinds of things because, you know, I have to say that, you know, when you go back to technology, back in 1994, it was my first introduction to the computer. A friend of mine that I was working with, I was working with his mother producing some materials for her. And, of course, he came to work for the station I was working for and running. And he says, I'm going to show you how to, start working on a computer. And I really didn't want to because I knew somewhere on that keyboard was this red button that would blow everything up. If not the computer, the world. I mean, you know, take it to the next logical step. And anyway, he showed me, he taught me, he says, and by the way, when you get this, you're going to love it. And I'll be honest with you, I did, because then I started building them. I built them from the ground up. I got the peripherals, the motherboard, the whole thing, the software, on and on. And so I could actually put them all together. Of course, today, even with the technology, it's changed so much. And of course, now most everything's done on your phone. Speaking of which, I was watching a video of how to replace the charger port on a particular style phone that I own. And it's easier to change the lens cover than it is the charger port, and I wouldn't even try, because the work is so fine, you know, it's so tedious. Mm-hmm. But he showed me these things, and he opened up a whole new realm for me. Now, when we're talking about consciously connecting, and of course, it's not that you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're not saying that we must divorce ourselves of technology.
No. Yeah.
We must, if this is the right phrase, we must get a handle on it.
Exactly.
Put it in its proper perspective that it is a tool. It is not the end-all be-all, and it is not crucial to our functioning and survival. There was a phrase in reference to wearing glasses someone told me, because I used to be really upset as a kid because I had to wear glasses. And I can't remember which way this goes that I'm supposed to fall into, but the phrase was, you wear glasses to live, you don't live to wear glasses. Something like that.
Uh-huh.
You know, something along those lines. So the technology is there to help us to live a better life, but we don't live for technology.
Right. We need to learn to master technology instead of technology mastering us. And what I mean by that is technology is mastering us in that we feel enslaved to carry our devices with us everywhere. I mean, to the beach, for heaven's sakes, at the expense of maybe a $600 or $700 phone or iPad getting ruined with sand, with water, with lotion. We don't care because we've got to stay connected, and we feel that we have to be the first to like and to share and to comment. And it's creating a reactionary society. You know, everything is just the reaction of now. Instead of being more inward, introspective, spending the time to contemplate before we make a decision, before we react, before we move forward. And Look, I love technology, and I really want your global community to understand that, because we wouldn't be here today as a global community if we didn't have technology. So for that, I'm thankful. I'm grateful. I think it's fantastic. I love the ease and simplicity when I need to reach out to someone on another continent, or I need to Skype with a client, or I need to book an airline ticket. But where we have crossed over to what I say, it's kind of like the dark side, is we seem to feel that we need to sleep with our phones, and if we wake up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom or get a drink of water, oh, my goodness gracious, the temptation is so great, we immediately have to connect to that other world, which is, am I missing a tweet? Am I missing a Facebook post? Do I need to look at my Instagram account? Oh, wait, was Richard supposed to email me about the interview today? Oh, I better check on that. As opposed to having limitation and realizing, this is my downtime. This is my rejuvenating and my restful, peaceful time to recharge for tomorrow. I'm not going to even think about picking up a device, but that's not what's happened.
Yeah, and I have to say that, and this is, I kind of went a little backwards, because I used to have to get up from the living room when we're watching TV, go into the studio, which is a second bedroom on the other side of the house, turn the computer on, check email, then power the computer down, and then come back. And that could take six minutes. Now I've got my phone right next to me. Pick up the phone, tap it. Oh, email. No, delete. Okay, delete. I'll respond later. And we're talking 10, 15, maybe 20 seconds. But still, it's a break in the continuity of that, if you will, that connectedness.
Yes. And what happens is, if you're in the middle of dinner or a conversation or watching a movie, when you pick up that device to check those emails, you are changing your focus. So every time we're jumping out of one thing and doing something else and jumping out of one thing and changing the focus and going back and then trying to find the thread, we all know what happens, because that's taken a toll on all of us. And I, too, found that you end up with monkey brain, and you cannot, you go back, and I always have had a really clear thread, and I can stay laser focused. And I really found, after years of doing that myself, that I would come back to what it was that was happening, and I'd say, okay, wait a minute, what were we talking about? Wait, what did I need to look for? I was in the middle of doing, okay, what was that? And I thought, oh, that's not good, because the time that it takes to kind of, you know, find that thread again and rethread and move forward, and then by that time, we've disrupted ourselves again by realizing, whoops, I should have said this, because we were so reactionary. Whoops, mm-hmm. I should have done that. Let me go back. Let me send another email. And so we really need to look at, again, how do we master technology instead of it mastering us? And there need to be times in your day that you specifically check your inbox. And then there are other times and other activities and other commitments and times of communion where you are really going to put the brakes on and give yourself the guidelines that you will not pick devices up.
I know, too, that there are those who, in the midst of maybe they're watching a movie in a theater, or even television at home, or even listening to something, and there are two or more of them there, And this is actually devoid of technology. This is just like, you know, devoid of common courtesy. They start talking, mm-hmm. and you're trying to focus, and they're asking you a question. It's a very important question. I won't diminish that aspect of it, but it's like at the wrong time. I'm trying to listen to this. For example, I've had this happen to me where somebody said, I want you to watch this. And so we'll turn it on. And then all of a sudden they start asking me questions totally separate from what we're watching. And I'm sitting there going, what are you doing? You wanted me to watch this. I can't focus if you ask me questions. And that's really kind of almost the role technology is sort of playing these days. Let's talk about, and that's a really good point. You know, I don't even want to use the word budgeting time, mapping out your time, maybe set aside. 5 minutes. You're coming home from work. You get home from work at, say, 5:30, thereabouts. Okay, for the next 5 or 10 minutes, I'm checking my emails. I'm checking any messages, and so on and so forth, texts and so forth. And if it's important, I'll need to follow up on it. And then I'm leaving the technology in this room and we're going in the other room and, you know, doing whatever it is that we, you know, watch a movie, television program, have dinner, play with the dogs or the animals that we have, so forth and so on. That sounds to me like a sort of a good plan, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I know that for myself, I have to set limitations. If I very often say I'm going to spend 30 minutes on emails, it happens to me in the same way it happens to anybody else. You suddenly look up and it's an hour and 20 minutes and you're like, wait, what happened? And I'm not done. And then what do? You go for another hour. And what I've had to do just for myself and my own peace of mind is I have my phone on my desk. I set my timer. When the timer goes off, that's it. I finish whatever sentence I'm in the middle of, whatever email I'm in the middle of doing, and then that is it. And I've had to keep that commitment to myself that it's now time to get up and go outside, or it's time to go for a bike ride, or it's time to make dinner, or it's time to get to a client's office, or whatever it is that's next. You really have to build those limitations in, because they will help you to actually achieve more.
Tell me about from your experience, about the energetics, if you will, involved in consciously connecting. I mean, we certainly know from a mental standpoint, in terms of our attention span, that it actually can go much further when we're focused. And by the way, my boss, a couple of years ago, he basically says, from this day forward, we will no longer multitask. It is forbidden. Mm-hmm. However, and then he came up with this wonderful phrase, but you are allowed to serial single task. And there is a study that came out around that time that he said this, he wasn't aware of it at the time, that tracked the quality of work, not the productivity, but the quality of that productivity when people multitasked as opposed to serial single tasking.
Yes.
And the results were quite astounding, that the quality of the work of those multitaskers was inferior by upwards of 30 or 40% as opposed to those who were single tasking.
Yes. And the reason is, when we're single tasking, we are 100% consciously connected to what it is that we are doing in that moment. We are in that moment committed. When we are multitasking, and we are multitasking these days with not just two things, you know, back in the day it was maybe three, but usually two things we were multitasking. Now we're multitasking. We're sending one email. We've got another window open where we're working on a project. We're texting. We've got other, another device where we're following social media. We've got somebody on the phone, you know, in our ear, in an earpiece. We're eating lunch. So we're doing 6, 7, 10 things at once, and then we wonder why we're not as productive, and we wonder why we're so mentally and physically tired. So yes, it's very important to come at our day from the place of really being connected and committed and being in the moment of what it is that you need to accomplish, what it is you need to do, think about, as opposed to doing lots and lots and lots of stuff that sometimes there is, I think, the idea that if we have lots on the stove, you know, we're very busy. I'm very busy. I hear so many people say, "Oh, I'm just very busy," and that's become the 21st century mantra that people really like to say. Yet the quality of what they're very busy doing very often isn't there. It's lacking and it's missing because they're really not connected internally.
Well, I have to say that the whole aspect of being very busy. I have days when I can't get out of the control room all day because it's live shows. Then we have programmers who want to come in and record their programs for broadcast later. Then it's another live show, and so by 5 o'clock, I've been sitting for 6 or 7 or 8 hours. I maybe I've gotten up to walk into my office to grab this or that or the other, but it's just sitting there. And again, what's really funny is it's not that I don't enjoy my work. No, it's not that. But it's like, is there still blue sky outside and is there still fresh air?
So something you need to be mindful of, Richard, on those days, because as entrepreneurs and so many of us have those days when we are tied to a desk, whether it's in an office or in our home, and we wonder, is the sky still blue? It's really important to have some movement, because again, that gets the energy flowing. It, you know, sweeps the cobwebs out of the brain. And so, what I teach to a lot of CEOs and a lot of executives is it's very easy, because again, we all have headsets. It becomes very easy to stand up at your desk and balance on one foot and then switch and balance on another foot and do ankle pumps. You know, we talk about, ankle pumps and how valuable they are when we fly, you know, overseas and, you know, doing the circling of your ankles, you know, clockwise 10 times, counterclockwise 10 times. So, you know, stretching, arms above our head, you know, these are all things that it's really important to be mindful of doing that every hour when you have a day, exactly like you're explaining.
Well, it's certainly something that there is no question. We need to find ways of getting a better handle on the allocation of our time, whether technology's involved or not. And I think that that's something that, and I know this is one of the things that your expertise in, if you will, is this whole aspect. I mean, you do coaching as well. I mean, you're a business consultant. You're as well. And I've found this mentor. I know what it is, but I've never thought of myself as one, even in the context of training somebody. It's just, you know, I've always thought that kind of puts me up somewhere where I don't want to be, but I understand it. I do understand it. You're also a facilitator for clients to reach their goals, and you're basically here to help us all to try to achieve the things that, well, what we talk about on this program, New Paradigms for a New World, giving people choices and knowledge of those choices to help make their dreams come true. And you provide people with those kinds of choices that maybe they'd never heard of before. So let's look at that in our next segment as we go to break. Let's look at that and try to give our listeners some direction, if you will, a starting place. I like the way that you've laid out the book. It's like a calendar. And it's very cool. We'll talk about that. We're talking with Holland Haas. She is the author of Consciously Connecting. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, along with Holland Haas, and we're talking about consciously connecting. We're asking you to put down that cell phone, put down that tablet, disconnect the Bluetooth, and look forward to a simple process to reconnecting in a disconnected world. And we're not talking about pairing your Bluetooth earpiece to your phone or your TV or anything else. We're talking about, I'll go ahead and use the current vernacular, pairing yourself with the human beings in your world. So you've laid out this book. Now, I do have to, I take umbrage with one aspect of this calendar concept. Some months there are 5 Sundays, but be that as it may, you break this down into a fascinating month-by-month process that I guess people starting on a Sunday and working through the week with that particular concept, for example, you have a first, second, third, and fourth Sundays reflecting on slowing down. This is January, the first Sunday in January. Reflecting on your blessings, second Sunday. On holidays, third Sunday. And then on the fourth Sunday, reflect on unsubscribing. Oh, I wish I could, but every time I click on that I want to unsubscribe, they know I don't want the stuff and they keep sending it. But let's talk about some of these concepts as far as you've laid them out in this book and in the order. And how did you prioritize these, not only by month, but then by week in each of those months?
Oh, well, it was like putting a giant puzzle together. And what I tried to do is break down, you know, each month has a theme. And then within that theme, there are four weekly exercises. And again, I don't want to scare the listeners by thinking that they're going to have 10 more things to add to their list. This is really about, again, consciously connecting to being and not so much doing. So you read at the most, it's usually 2 to 3 pages per week. That's it. And then you're set out into the world with your new intention and how you're going to consciously connect in new and different ways. So let's go with the last one of the unsubscribing.
Yeah.
How often do we all arrive at that inbox in the morning or the middle of the night, whenever it is that you're checking them, all day long maybe, and we say, oh, not this again. Yet, there are restaurants we no longer eat at. There are stores we no longer shop at. There are companies that we no longer are interested in. Yet, what we keep doing over and over and over again is just hitting delete. And those same emails just keep popping up and filling our inbox. And really, it's inbox clutter. And think about your junk drawer, right? We've all got that junk drawer. When you finally make the decision to take everything out of the junk drawer and really clean out the junk drawer and put back in that drawer what it is you actually need and use, what do you do with the rest of the stuff? You either give it away or throw it away, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm asking you to look at your inbox in the same way. What is there that no longer serves a purpose in your life? And that is what you want to start unsubscribing to. And I have had so many people send me emails that have talked about once they've done that, it is so cathartic that they've moved into their coat closets, their bedroom closets, their linen closets, you know, junk drawers, and they just keep going because it feels so good. And it's starting small to really creating more productivity in your life, in your home, in your office.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, although there are those of us who have been so lax in going through our inboxes and getting rid of those things that certainly I get rid of a lot of stuff as I go through delete, delete, delete. But then there are some things that come in, I'm going, I'll check into this later. And then I leave it there. And so I could have, and that's the sad thing with my email is I don't know how many I have in my inbox. It could be up to 1,000 or more.
Oh, I'm sure.
So it's going, I will have to set aside.
Well, you know, even the I'll check it later is a little bit like the clothing that we haven't worn for a year, but we keep it in the closet and say, I am going to wear it. Yeah, I am going to get to it. I'm going to wear it next year. We never wear it. We never wear those clothes. They don't call out to us. We're not going to read those emails. We're not going to partake in whatever it is that they're trying to get us to do or solicit us for. It's not going to happen, which is why once you can wrap your brain around that concept, it becomes so much easier to say, listen, I've been hearing from this same company, this same organization for, gosh, oh, I remember, I think it was since 2013. It's now 2016.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm really not going to take action with this group. It's time for me to let it go. And you'll find that by letting it go here, it becomes easier for you to let other things go. Other piles on your desk that, again, have been there for 6, 8, 10 months, that file folder that you've never opened, but you feel you absolutely need to keep that information. And then, you know, you do this unsubscribe exercise, and then suddenly you open up that folder and you're like, why did I ever need this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
This isn't even anything I would share or talk about anymore. Like, this is so yesterday, and suddenly you're able to get rid of that. And then, you know, you move into another part of your office or you move into another part of your home and you look at something. And again, it's now with fresh perspective and fresh eyes. And you say, oh, my God. Did I really save this sweater? Oh, for crying out loud. It's like this, it's all balled up in the elbows. And, you know, I never really even liked that color. Somebody convinced me to get it. Oh, I'm gonna give this away. And it really moves and progresses your life along. And, of course, with spring on the way, it's really a great time to start implementing these ideas.
You know, I like that. And there are other ways of unsubscribing, even if you don't click on the unsubscribe link and maybe it doesn't work or whatever, if you can take the time to go through into your email, and because this is what we're kind of focusing on, there is a way to filter and or redirect certain mail coming from certain sources.
Yes.
And you can go straight to the trash bin or the delete, the trash bin. And I do that in terms of redirecting to specific folders in my email that tell me that, oh, this person who I want to connect with, who I have business with on a regular basis, just sent me something. I then go to that folder. Maybe that would be another way of helping to eliminate this process in the future, is when you start doing business with somebody, okay? For example, I created a whole new email address strictly for this radio show. I mean, most of the time I give out richard@richarddugan.com.
Yeah.
But I thought, how hard is it to set up a whole nother email address, TMYS, for Tell Me Your Story? Gee, what a concept. what an innovation. And have people send me emails there who I'm conversing with on the phone, who call me and say, hey, I have an idea for a guest for your show, da-da-da-da-da. Okay, send me an email. I'll follow up on it. And they send it to tmys@richarddugan.com. And I know, oh, this person, it looks like they're responding too. That's not to say that you're going to get, you know, maybe you'll get some spam in there and you'll have to still go through it. But at least those people that you want to communicate with, they're going to get to you a lot faster than you having to sift through all of the other garbage and
so forth.
Absolutely.
And you've brought up a really great point here, Richard, which I really want everyone to really capture this and understand. You see, what you're doing is exactly what I'm talking about in the book. You are consciously connecting to what you need to design your life in the way that it works for you. So setting up that separate email, you see, you're conscious of what it is that you need, and then you've taken the action to move forward to create that separate email so that it's very clean, it's very clear, you know exactly when there's an email in that inbox, what it's going to pertain to, how important it is, and how do you get to that? Well, you are able to move into that space. We need to look at designing our lives the way that it fits for each individual. And it's not one size fits all. And that is the message that consciously connecting is sharing and giving you the tools so that each and every week and every month, there are different ways that you can connect into the consciousness, which means engaging your personal power. And so many of us these days are not coming from a place of personal power. We're coming from a place of helter-skelter because we're so busy dancing to what it is that social media and inboxes are, you know, eat here, you have my coupon, do this, tweet that, like that, share this. And we spend so much time doing these other things that then at the end of the day, when it comes to doing what we need, designing our life in the way we need to design it, we're exhausted and we're like, I can't do that. I got to sit down and have a glass of wine and unwind. How could I possibly think about myself when in fact we need to be dancing a little less for others and really start to find our own tune and begin to dance for ourselves?
You know, there's an interesting story that I remember hearing, and I've listened to it a number of times from one of my favorite musical artists. And he was sitting there talking about one of his relatives, either as an uncle or what have you, and they were chatting one afternoon, and he says, you know, Harry, you know, you go to work and you do your thing, and some days you come home and it's a good tired, and some days it's a bad tired. And some days you've gone to work and you've fought other people's battles and you've won other people's wars and you've built other people's products or whatever the case might be. You come home and it's a bad tired and you're restless, you're trying to sleep and it's just not going away. Then there are other days when you go to work and you fight your battles and you won your wars and you built what you wanted to build and you go home and you put your head on the pillow and you rest easy. And he says, that's where I'm at. And when I go into that, whatever the great beyond is, I can go knowing that I did what I wanted to do. One of the purposes of this program is to find our purpose. But when we get lost in this unconscious technological connection, we can lose sight of that. So it seems to me like this is a huge and or major outgrowth, and it's not a side benefit of what you're talking about in consciously connecting. This is, if you will, the purpose of this work and what you're doing.
Yes, and to your point, there is great truth in when you love what you do and you are moving toward your goals each and every day, doing at least three things that can move you toward your goals, you go home and it is a good tired. You rest and say, oh, I'm exhausted, but oh, I had such a great day. It was so exhilarating. And that's, for a lot of people, they're not living in that spot. And for those people, I think what it's really important to share is it is possible and it is out there for you. Whatever it is that you want, whatever your heart desires, it's out there for you. And as soon as you realize that, and when you're willing to start implementing some of these tools that we've talked about today, you'll begin to see that you're moving toward the goalpost little by little each day.
That is another, I think, very important aspect to look at in this. It's as I was, I think I said at the beginning of the program, in regards to trying to change the world. Well, when you think about it in that context, it's enormous. And you know what? When I was a kid growing up, and even in my teens and 20s, I didn't even want to try. And then I began to, and as I was sharing this with people, they would share back with me, well, then just try to do what little you can right where you are. Don't worry about the world. Don't even focus on the world, which is one of the reasons why I don't focus a lot on the news. And just do what little you can right where you are, the little bit to affect change in your own life and the lives of the people around you. So we encourage people to do that very same thing. So don't bite off, as the phrase goes, don't bite off more than you can chew. Just take little bites. My wife and I are in the process of, and we've been doing this for several months, of, you might call it honing down or spring cleaning, but even in the wintertime. And when I first looked at the project of each room that we had to go through in the house, even though it's only a two-room cottage with storage underneath, I thought, oh my God, we're never going to finish this.
Overwhelming.
Yeah.
Yes.
But we took on first, let's just do this corner over here. And we did that corner. And a week later or 2 weeks later, and it didn't matter. Okay, let's shift from that corner here to the wall next to the corner. And we'll do that. Mm-hmm. And so on and so forth. And little by little, there was transformation.
Yes.
And I think that we do need to change our perspective from macro to micro.
Yes. Yes. And there's a week in the book where exactly what you're talking about, you either, you know, you can choose a room, you can start with a closet, but there's a minimum of a couple of things each day that you're going to, you know, during that 7 days, you're going to make the commitment that week that there's going to be a minimum of two things a day that you're going to, you know, either throw away if they can't be used by anyone. You know, sometimes mm-hmm. things are broken beyond repair,
yeah.
and it's just time that they go in the trash.
Yeah, but I could fix that later. I'll put that over here and I'll fix it later, okay?
Oh, I know. There's always the fix it later. And that the fix it later is later for a reason because it never happened.
That's
so
right.
It needs to go.
Okay.
and then there's, you know, the pile that you make that you can donate to a school, to a church, to Goodwill, to, you know, again, whatever it is in your community, but you make that pile and suddenly you realize, you know, you've got a pile and then you're filling a bag and then you're filling several bags and then you're like, oh my goodness, I've got to take this out to the car and then the trunk is filled up. And so it's really great. And there's something that feels really good also when you are giving things away and you know that someone else out there who has less, who has maybe stumbled and fallen on some hard times, mm-hmm. who maybe hasn't mastered the journey in quite the way that you have, will find this article. We'll also find them, this piece of clothing, this pot, this pan, this old computer or chair. We'll find them also, and it will help to rebuild someone's life. There's really a great feeling to know that when you're giving items away, that you have the ability, by giving something away that you're no longer using, that can transform the life of someone else.
Well, absolutely. I don't know if you have thought of this in this context, but it kind of occurred to me. Now, I might be completely off base and wrong about this. I know that you've seen the programs, or at least you're aware of, and we're kind of talking about this, hoarding. And it is a real problem, not just in this country, but I'm sure around the world. But there's a kind of hoarding that I hadn't thought of before until I started hearing the political talk, but also the frustration and rhetoric, if you will, regarding our economic system and the one percenters and the 99%. And I got to wondering about this. And again, correct me if I'm wrong, but you can hoard money too.
Of course.
Billionaires, the possibility is there that they're hoarders of money.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't want to let it go. And that's just as bad as, again, hoarding stuff in your house to where you can't even walk through it. And isn't there a metaphysical construct here in regards to flow in both examples?
Well, and we know when we hoard money, when we become very tight and we don't want to let our money go. And again, this is whether you're a millionaire or whether you're earning $50,000 a year. You know, when we go into that mindset of scarcity, and so often we don't think that millionaires, because in our mind they're financially rich, we don't think of them as coming from a place of scarcity. Yet many have talked about the fear of running out of money. Many have talked about coming from a place where money wasn't thrown around, they didn't have a lot. So they are still in that place of disbelief, first of all, that they have all of this, and they're also coming from a place of scarcity. If I give too much away, oh my gosh, there won't be enough left for me. What if I run out? What if I get old and I need money because I'm sick? Oh my goodness, I better not give any to anybody. I'm just going to keep it all within my family and myself.
Yeah.
And that sets up a very different dynamic, because as we are feeling scarcity around money, we know that then we feel scarcity, and that translates into so many other areas of our lives. It translates into how we have relationships and how we treat those relationships, and it goes on to, you know, when we are out with people, how we act and react. Again, when a check comes, or when we need to spend money on something that you know, is important. There can always be the judgment and the shame that accompanies that. So there are so many layers to that, but it really is coming from a base of scarcity.
And that scarcity concept can be disguised in so many subtle ways.
Yes.
That we don't even realize it. I took two constructs of our American culture, if you will. One was the turn of the last century, immigrants coming to this country, specifically from Europe and across the Atlantic, to Ellis Island. And of course, the phrase, we'll call it a catchphrase, was that this was the land of opportunity. You could make anything happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that during the 20th century, that people did just that. Then you have the other side, especially in these times, where our government wants to tax the top 1% more than everybody else because they supposedly have the wherewithal. And the thought occurred to me, well, well, what's the point of wanting to, you know, acquire millions of dollars through entrepreneurship and in the land of opportunity if they're just going to take it away? What's the why bother? There's where, to me, that's the that's one of those subtleties.
Mm-hmm.
Can you address that a little bit?
There's a lot of conversation around that. You know, I think this has become a very big topic of conversation in the last, 4, 5, 6 years, because, you know, there are two sides to the coin. You know, this is, on one hand, the land of opportunity, capitalism. Capitalism means that, you know, we're taxed what we're taxed, and it doesn't, you know, we don't say, oh, and by the way, you earned over this, so we're going to add an extra tax because, as a government, we misspent or, you know, we've got to support other programs. And then there is that flip side of the coin, which, you know, there are a lot of people who now are feeling very entitled that there are those that are earning so much more, and therefore things should change. And I think really what this comes down to is it is a personal, this is something that's personal. And I think when we look at billionaires globally, not just in our country, and certainly the very wealthy millionaires, I mean, $1 million isn't the same as, you know, when I was a kid, if you had $1 million, I think you could, you know, at 50, you could retire and you'd have plenty of money. It's very different now. $1 million is not that much money in the realm of, you know, what it costs and what mounting, you know, costs will be if mm-hmm. you retire and have to go to a retirement community or assisted living. So it's not so much money these days. But so, yeah. So let's look at the people with, you know, hundreds of millions. I think it's always interesting to watch, you know, someone like a Warren Buffett who says, hey, I'm going to not give a lot to my children. I'm going to give a fair amount to my children. But they've been given wonderful educations, and they've also learned through my company, and they know how to earn a living, and they shouldn't just be expecting. And I want to help others through mm-hmm. my foundation. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Bill and Melinda Gates have also set up their foundation. And I think what is more interesting than the government being involved in this piece is watching what these very wealthy millionaires and billionaires are doing. And I know that I make a choice then to say, who do I want to support through the goods that I buy? Because it's, you know, it's that trickle down. Who do I want to support? You know, Berkshire Hathaway has a big stake in Company X. You know what? I like what he's doing. Therefore, I'm going to make sure that every time I go to the store that that's a product that's in my grocery cart, because mm-hmm. in a way, kind of trickles down, and in a way that's a part of supporting him. So I try to think of it bigger picture, mm-hmm. and how can I support these people who align to giving back in such a grand way financially because they've been given so much.
I think, too, that one of the other traps that we get into, those of us who, I suppose we could say, we're in the 99%, the other trap is that we get sucked into the argument, especially when you hear, because you used the phrase trickle-down, trickle-down economics. And then there are those who take the position, it doesn't work, and they get on their soapbox and they orate and so forth about, you know, how bad it is and this and that and the other. And then we start to buy into it. And then now, guess what? Now we're in that, we've been sucked into that subtle trap of lack. You know, because now we're focused on them and what they have and what I don't have. And instead of focusing on what I do have, where I am, I mean, I hear people complaining, or even where I live in Santa Barbara, I mean, you hear it all the time about the cost of living here. Mm-hmm. It's like, but my question to you is, are you living here? Well, yeah, but it's, no. Are you living here? Well, yeah. Now, will you please look around at where you're living? Could you live somewhere else like this, even though you're paying what you're paying? This wonderful seaside fishing village with incredible mountains and wilderness and wildlife out in the waters and on and on and on. I mean, It's priceless. I've wanted to get to the ocean for years. I did not expect to move to Santa Barbara. But guess what? Here I am.
Yes.
You know, so we lose focus when we listen to others.
Yes, we do. And it's, you know, in the book, I have a week where I gently nudge for everyone to really look outside of their comfort zone. So it's great to do that, you know, especially when it's an election year or, you know, you're voting in your own state or something, because if you have tended to vote on one side, listen to what the other side is saying. If you tended to vote on the other side, listen to the other side. You know, just try to expand your knowledge base. Just try to be open to new ideas. I clearly state in the book, this isn't about changing religions, changing your political party, changing your, you know, your underlying moral structure. That's not what it's about. But it is about going broad, going bigger, really listening to everyone's story, really trying to get the full picture. Because we all know that when we only read one newspaper or only listen to one news channel or only let that one friend, you know, chew our ear off, so to speak, with their particular beliefs, that we're missing out on a whole world and really doing a disservice to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important. It's always important to certainly have an opinion. But what I find very often, again, is the disconnect and the unconsciousness of very often not knowing why you have that opinion or having the support for that opinion so that you can clarify in a conversation. And notice I didn't use the word debate, but a conversation, because that's how we all grow.
Yeah.
And that's how we all learn.
Yeah. You know, and that's so critical. It really is. We talk about on this program the concept of a circle. And there are points on the circle. And what we're trying to do with this program is take people to different points on the circle to view what's going on in the middle. As the phrase or the saying goes, you can have 10 people see a car accident, you're going to get 10 different stories. But that's a good thing because you get a broader perspective of what really happened. But what happens, of course, is that we take on a particular mindset, whether it be a religious or political or economic or whatever it is, and that's it. And I think also one of the other problems, too, is that we take on the mindset that we detest the other side so much, even though we might internally say, you know, that's an interesting, I like that idea, in general, the concept. But doggone it, I'm not going to verbalize it. I'm not going to say it out loud because then they'll label me this and I'm not that.
Right.
And I've even made certain comments about different issues over the years and people say, well, you're really a conservative. I said, no, I'm not. That's how I feel about that specific issue. But that doesn't make me a conservative, nor the converse, I'm taking that position on that issue. No, that does not make me a liberal.
Right. You're middle of the road. I remember years ago when Oprah started her school in South Africa, and I remember there were a fair amount of people that I knew that kind of, you know, we had conversations where they weren't happy, and they said, you know, Oprah should have started a girls' school here. Oprah should have done something here. And I listened, and I said in one conversation, I said, do you see the bigger picture, though, that is a part of the world where, you know, these children, like, the biggest toy they have very often is a stick. You know, it's very different from the kids who are, you know, 7, 10, 15 running around with iPhones and iPads and, you know, very, very, very different. And that for these children, if they don't get an education, especially for these girls, if the girls do not get an education, what the difference that makes in their lives.
Oh,
I
education
remembered a couple of people
huge.
Stopped and said, well, I hadn't thought about it that way.
Yeah.
And I said, so, again, I said, I don't know, Oprah. I don't want to speak for Oprah. But, you know, I think that her bigger vision is looking at girls in other areas of the world who have such impoverished lives that education will make such a difference and transform them into being the leaders that they can be and will be.
Mm-hmm.
And we have very different opportunities here in the States, which again is probably, you know, part of the reasoning. And again, and these are very, very smart women, and they're well educated, and they earn a lot of money. And once we had that conversation, a couple of them said, "That's a really good point, and I hadn't thought of it that way." And then, you know, someone said, "I still wish you would have built a school here." And I said, "And I understand that, and I'm glad you shared that, and I understand that, and I'm sure a lot of other people do." But there, you know, you have to look at the flip side. And to me, the flip side is always, if someone is doing good in the world, and let's face it, educating anyone is a good. That's a plus. Because we're changing, we're raising the vibration and the connection in the world. So anytime you're choosing to put money and funding toward educating another human being, I personally only see that as a plus.
I couldn't agree with you more. It bears out the adage of teaching someone to fish and they will be able to feed themselves for a lifetime. And what really is very interesting is that there are people who have bought into the argument against education. The last thing that you want is an educated electorate, you know, and it's like, oh, wait a minute. But isn't that, again, that goes back to our premise on this program of giving people choices and knowledge of those choices. I didn't know that I could have moved from Phoenix to Santa Barbara long before my wife and I lost both our jobs. But that's how it played out. But the point is that I didn't know that. I didn't even think about it. It wasn't even a concept in my mind. If you're a construction worker and you have a toolbox that's full of tools, but there's a guy over there who's got a toolbox that's empty except for a hammer, and then he gets a saw, but he doesn't know how to use it, he can't do much unless someone teaches him how to use it. And then once he knows how to use it, then he's on to the next step and so forth. So I couldn't agree with you 100%. Before we wrap up, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program. I want to let our listeners know that the website is Holland Haas, that's HollandHaiis.com. Now, can I give out the email address to folks if they wanted to contact you directly?
That you may do.
That's also HollandHaas@gmail.com. So we'll be linked to you as well. Before we wrap up the program, three final questions. Who is Holland Haas?
So I am a connectivity expert, and what I do and what gets me out of bed every day and excites me is helping you to plug into any area of your life or your business where you feel a disconnect.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
The work that I want to achieve is I would like to bring this message. I stated in the open of the book that I wanted this message to go global. I only could imagine what that would feel like for millions, continents, to be united globally in doing the exercises of consciously connecting. And I hope that to bring this to Super Soul Sunday, because I really do believe the Super Soulers, this is a book for them.
Mm-hmm. And though you may have answered this question in various different ways throughout the program, what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose is to bring connection to as many people, to empower people. I want you to find that seed of power within so that you arrive each and every day seated in a place of power, which allows you then to consciously connect to everything that happens to you in your life, and to be able to weigh out what works for you, what is your destiny, what are your dreams, what are your goals, and to be able to cross the finish line.
Holland Haas, I want to thank you again for joining us on the program. It's been a privilege and a pleasure to chat with you this hour, and I encourage our listeners to listen to the entire interview by going to richarddugan.com, the archives page, where you will be able to hear the entirety of this, because normally we only are allowed 50 minutes, but we have another 10 minutes on this program. Again, thank you so much for joining us, and I extend the invitation, should you find yourself wayward west in Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Oh, well, you'll find me there at some point. Thank you so much, and I want to thank all your listeners because, as we all know, if they don't tune in, the rest doesn't really matter. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Holland Haas, my guest, Consciously Connecting, and I hope that you'll pick up a copy of the book. Go to the website, hollandhaas.com, and we will have the link to that site at our site here at richarddugan.com. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.